Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is currently 8:03 a.m. and that is Guangzhou time. This is the audio for August 15th. And when we look at the total of the running total of bonds that have got negative yields, it's hard to keep an accurate figure in mind because it is changing so quickly. Just think that last week it was at 15 trillion, and at the end of today it is at $16.72 trillion worth of bonds that are trading at a negative yield. This is an example of what happens when bonds go negative and there isn't a handy answer to what can be done to arrest the decline. It's all about bond convexity and the sensitivity of bonds to interest rates when the yields are negative, or when there is a potential that the interest rate itself will go negative. We've already got a negative deposit rate in Europe, and they are talking about moving the interest rate down into negative territory as well. That is creating a very difficult situation in terms of investors, but or perhaps another way of thinking about it is that this is a boon for investors because they are holding assets that are rapidly appreciating in price. But it's really not great news for banks. It's rather difficult for the people that wish to hold these kinds of bonds to maturity. It makes a nonsense out of trying to create a bond ladder to manage long-term liabilities. So it is essentially turning the bond market into a trader's market rather than an investor's market. And realistically, the entire reason the bond market exists is because it offers investors the ability to manage their longer-term liabilities. And what the trend is telling us is that the pace of the quantity of bonds that are trading with negative yields is accelerating. This is sucking money in because of the strength of the momentum move. There is a clear assumption that no one is going to have to hold these bonds at maturity. Of course, we know that's ridiculous. We know that someone is eventually going to have to hold these bonds, but it does also help to highlight the fact that the bonds that are doing best are those with the longest maturities, because those are the bonds that have got the longest to run before this big question about who holds the bag at the end really does come into focus. That's one of the reasons why that Austrian 100-year bond has been making such headlines. When you don't have to worry about a maturity until 2117, then you could really play the convexity on a bond like that. And if we think about it, that this bond was issued at close to par. It's currently trading at 210, so it has been one of the best performing assets globally, not a mind simply in the bond markets. Well, what we've now seen is that the 10-year yield on US Treasuries is down to 1.5%, and that represents the lower side of the range that's been evolving now for much of the last 8 years. When it failed to sustain the move above 3% back at the end of last year, it was looking quite likely that once it fell below the trend mean, that we were the uptrend had been broken from the lows in 2016, there was a strong likelihood that it would retest the lower side of the range. It's now done that. That looked like a really brave prognostication 4 or 5 months ago, and it has been realized in very short order. There is a clear acceleration underway. This does represent an area of resistance for prices, and we've certainly seen that there has been some support coming through from the Federal Reserve in terms of trying to arrest the decline in yields over the course of this 8 years. So now the question is, what's going to happen next? We certainly know that there is an acceleration underway, and acceleration is a trend ending, and we are in the region of a previous area of resistance for prices. So it is a logical area where we might anticipate some pause of consolidation. But the fact is that there is a relative strength argument going on here. US 10-year treasuries still yield 1.5%, again, in a global environment where $17 trillion of bonds have got a negative yield. Well, that's obviously going to start to get people wondering and searching out bonds that have got positive yields anywhere. So that is helping to contain any kind of advance in the high yield spread. And the fact that it has pushed through 467 basis points in here today and pushed onto a new higher high, that is obviously a signal that there is some stress among issuers. And against a background where we have such a huge quantity of debt that is trending negatively and that with negative yields, and also that you have this compression in yields everywhere, if high yield spreads are starting to expand, it's telling us that the high yield sector is not benefiting from the compression in yields to nearly the same extent that the benchmark is. And that is perhaps a clear indication that people are starting to worry about an economic contraction. There are two primary areas that I think do need to be monitored in terms of the high yield sector. One is among the companies that have got business models that are 100% dependent on access to cheap liquidity, and Netflix is certainly one of those. Perhaps the most important point, though, is that this does not look like a bullish chart. Having accelerated in early 2018, it pulled back violently, then it rebounded to recoup the majority of the decline, and now it's rolling over. The company's runway to profitability is rather murky, and continuing to raise prices against a background where an increasingly large number of companies are offering streaming services doesn't seem to be a particularly sound idea. Then, of course, you have the fact that the kind of programming they're producing isn't particularly good. So that's also a headwind here. Tesla is another company that has had to go to the market on a number of occasions for additional liquidity, and the share has rolled over in here today. It has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. It needs to hold that $200 area, but again, having ranged above the previous peak for a sustained period, then now it is at a point where we need to see some support coming through, or some of the most bearish of forecasts will become more realizable if it can't hold that $200 area. When we think about the kinds of companies that have been around for a while but perhaps haven't been able to gain the kind of momentum necessary to push up into the royalty of social media, for example, well, TripAdvisor is now rolling over and moved to a new reaction low in here today. So it isn't as if all companies are doing better in here. There is certainly some change of the guard. There has been a differentiation in terms of what exactly it is people are willing to support. The uptick in high yield spreads is suggestive of some risk capital getting taken off the table. We already know that there are a substantial number of investors have got a lot of cash. There is a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. There is a massive move in this momentum in terms of the bond markets. So what is doing better? Well, the stock markets have been rather, well, they paused in here today. I wouldn't say they rallied. They have at least paused over the last 2 weeks in the region of the trend mean. We need a clear upper dynamic to confirm support in this area. Monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, but the problem is that we do have an inverted yield curve. What's important to remember is that an inverted yield curve is a lead indicator for a future recession. Generally speaking, immediately after you get an inverted yield curve, you get a pop on the upside because investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the prospect of additional monetary stimulus helping the economy, and they are willing to think that it is just a mid-cycle slowdown. And generally, that does contribute to markets pushing up additionally. But then you get the contraction coming later, and that's certainly what we had in the mid 2000s, and it's also what we had in 1998. That it wasn't really until 1999 that the bubble seriously took off. The big question today is really about the size of the move we've already had in the bond markets. And that is a incredibly profound change. When bond yields do start to rise once more, well, that is going to then ask some big questions, because there are going to be some very significant losses. When people are paying 210 for a bond that matures at par, well, eventually somebody is going to take that loss. Of course, it isn't going to be the big losses that are going to be realized quickly in a 100-year bond, but bonds that have got yields that are negative and are in the 1 to 2 to 3 year brackets, those are the ones that are going to be most acutely sensitive to any change in the underlying environment. That is the kind of thing that is going to put pressure on various parts of the economy, most particularly the leverage loan market. There has been an incredible surge in the quantity of leverage loans. The other fact, of course, is that the banking sector does not make money when you have an inverted yield curve. Their entire business model is based upon borrowing short and lending long term, and the S&P 500 banks has started to break lower. It is now at a new reaction low. So this does not look like a bullish chart either. When we think about what's going on in terms of the Nasdaq, and perhaps more importantly the semiconductors index, then at least this index has continued to hold the breakout. The question is, though, will it be able to continue to hold the breakout? And the large decline that we had on Cisco in here today, that does highlight that there is some risk getting taken off the table here, that these companies are not entirely immune from the trade war. And that was a big downward dynamic following poor earnings in here today. When we look at the outlook for interest rates, well, the Federal Reserve looks increasingly likely that they're going to have to cut interest rates again in September. The ECB is going to cut rates in September, and I think it is increasingly likely that they are all going to kick off another round of quantitative easing. So we're looking at QE4 for the USA, and we're looking at more QE for the ECB. By contrast, the JGB is at a yield that is attractive on a relative basis compared to those that are currently in Europe. It's only got a negative yield of 24 basis points. But again, this is another trend that is accelerating lower. The yen had rallied over the course of the last few weeks, and it is now encountering resistance in the region of that spike peak back in early January. But Japan is going to have to do more to arrest the advance in its currency. The Swiss have been buying more euros, they're trying to devalue their currency. And the other point, of course, is that the Swiss National Bank and the Japanese National Bank are large holders of either domestic or international equities. So they are already holding substantial quantities of risk assets. It does put the Swiss National Bank in a rather tight position if the shares of the companies they've been buying do move into a more bearish trend. Against a background where huge quantities of bonds are negative, one would logically think that the kinds of companies that pay reliable dividends and that have got real businesses should be doing better. And by and large, they have been doing better, and they are generally viewed as bond proxies. So they are rallying in conjunction with the bond market, but most particularly because they still have these positive yields and potential for dividend increases over time, which is not something you're getting with the bond market at these exaggerated levels. When we think about what is likely to happen over the course of the next while, then there is risk in the stock market that this is more than a consolidation in the region of the peak. I do think that we are in the middle of August. This is the time when you do get a scary environment appearing, and it unnerves investors. We do know that in September there is going to be a wall of fresh capital is going to hit this market, and that has the potential to push markets onto new highs. We also know that the inverted yield curve generally contributes to markets being higher within 6 months of the inversion, so that's also out there in our future. But we also have the fact that retail sales are still really quite firm. And while everyone is thinking about the potential for a recession in the USA, I really think that they're looking in the wrong place. The fact that Walmart pushed strongly higher here on strong domestic retail sales suggests that it's not the USA where we need to be worrying urgently about the outlook for a recession. The UK has already had a negative quarter of growth and also has an inverted yield curve, and the FTSE 100 has now broken down from its or below its 200-day moving average. The FTSE 250 index has been considerably more volatile over the course of the last decade, but it has now also broken below its trend mean. And what these indices are beginning to suggest is that there is the risk the UK is going to have a recession, and that the fact that it is being dragged down by Europe is rather ironic relative, I think, are considering that everyone is now are currently talking about Brexit. The fact that Germany has also pulled back below the trend mean and is also at risk of a recession. That highlights the reliance of that economy on exports to the rest of the EU and indeed to China. So Europe is where we have massive quantities of bonds that have got negative yields. It's where economies are contracting, and where the greatest pain is being felt from the trade war. Well, that suggests that if we're looking for anywhere that's going to have a series of recessions in the short term, it's in Europe. China's growth is slowing, and there is pressure coming to bear on the consumer, and I can definitely see that on the ground, that There is certainly an attempt to try and offer cheaper products, rather or diversify businesses. There was one store we used to enjoy going to, which was a nut store. They used to do very nice milk-flavored macadamia nuts. They simply don't do them anymore, and what they are now selling is popcorn. That will tell us clearly that the ability of consumers to pay premium prices has certainly diminished. And there are lots of different examples I've seen on the ground here that are very similar, that premium products that once were thriving in the Chinese consumer market are not getting the same kind of attention. There has been a downgrade in terms of purchasing power. That, I think, is one of the factors in contributing to the willingness of the Chinese to devalue the currency. But it is worth highlighting that the stock market is state controlled, and it has at least steadied in the region of the trend mean. The continued strife in Hong Kong is weighing on the local stock markets. The H-share index, however, is now back in the region of its lows for the year, and it does have a short-term oversold condition. So some bargain hunters will start to think that there might be some room for a bounce in here. But the protests are not over, and it does look like they're going to further intensify. And that does hold out a source of risk for the market that you perhaps don't have in other markets. And it does suggest that China does remain a rather more risky investment opportunity than you have elsewhere. The Indian market is also pausing here in the region of the trend mean. There has been a loss of momentum over the course of the last year, and this is about where demand needs to return if we are looking at a return to demand dominance. Gold prices have continued to hold the $1,500 area and pushed on to a new closing high in here today. This has been a reasonably tight consolidation, but against a background where you have 17 trillion with negative yields, the fact that gold doesn't pay an interest rate is rather beside the point. And then you have the fact that with increasingly large numbers of central banks and governments moving towards monetary and fiscal stimulus, then they are going to start to more eagerly use the value of their currency as a trading tool. And that competitive currency devaluation is the clearest bullish view that can help to propel the gold price. That's also helping to support the silver price. And silver is now trading sustainably above the $17 area, and this continues to look like a sustained recovery in the price. When we then think about what's going on in terms of Bitcoin, well, it pulled back rather sharply over the last few days, but it continues to hold this $10,000 area. This range that's been underway now for the last 6 weeks has been somewhat longer than the ranges we saw previously this year. It needs to hold the 10,000 level. I think you can see on the log scale chart that there is a sequence of higher reaction lows within that range. But if we are going to see this range resolved on the upside, then we should start to see the price doing better from here in the really not too distant future. And Ethereum is back below the $200 area and testing the region of the trend mean and has begun to steady. Personally, I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt, provided it is holding the region of the trend mean. But it does need to bounce from here in order to demonstrate a return to demand dominance. logically, we should anticipate that cryptocurrencies would do well in an environment where there is negative yields and a search for a safe haven or for a non-correlated asset. So far, gold has been doing the running in here, and the cryptocurrency markets have underperformed over the course of August in particular. Now the question is it because China is clamping down on its on currency controls and trying to stop the pace of capital flight? Is it because of fake trades that went through on Bitcoin and worries that it is another manipulated market? Those are obviously questions that will need to be answered, but the limited supply against a background of devaluing currencies is something that should help to support the cryptocurrencies over the medium term. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.